Welcome back to the Radio Academy podcast. I'm your host, Georgie Jameson, and this week we look at the film industry with a new podcast called Out of Frame. It's produced by Listen for Crew HQ at Warner Brothers Studios at Leavesden and presented by broadcaster Yinka Bocchini. Before we find out more about Out of Frame, let's have a listen.
Do you love movies?
Oh my gosh!
Please don't attack me with it.
Of course you do. But have you ever wondered what it takes to make one?
It can change the feeling of a whole scene.
All the craft, hard work and talent on and off the set. And there's so many amazing people and jobs that go into making a blockbuster or big TV series.
Loads of extras and there's massive green screen. The magic that happens.
I'm Yinka Bocchini and from Crew HQ at the heart of Warner Brothers Studio Leavesden, this is Out of Frame, where we explore and celebrate the importance of below-the-line roles. From costume designers to photographers.
So these are all tricks of the trade.
Stunt coordinators to armourers. This is the podcast to find out just what it takes to make your favourite movies and TV shows come to life. You'll get first-hand career advice.
Find the area you want to be in and then climb.
And a look at the industry.
That was you!
Yes.
From a perspective you've never seen before. Out of Frame by Crew HQ. Find us wherever you get your podcasts.
It is a podcast that is based in the heart of Warner Brothers Studios Leavesden. And basically, it's about below the line talent. As somebody who works in film on a very sparkly level, I host movie premieres, I do screenings and junkets and things like that. This is the other side of things. It's below the line talent. So everyone else, apart from the cast and directors that it takes to make film or a TV show, really have that Hollywood magic. The shows that you love, the films that you go to the cinema to see, this is about the people who put in the hours and make that happen, who don't often get the shout out or the flowers.
But nothing would happen without them, would it?
No, of course not.
Just explain to us what, because it's used in the podcast quite a lot and you've used it here as well, what the expression below the line talent actually means, because I'd not heard that before.
Me neither until I started working in film specifically. Below the line talent is anyone from lighting to sound to producing, first AD. You've got, you know, the coaches in there, as well as hair, makeup, stunts, special effects. It's anyone who works on the film who isn't sort of like the top billed cast or the director.
That's really similar to the radio industry, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. And the podcast industry, you've got your presenters, producers, the names, but then you've got all these layers underneath of people who, without them, it just isn't going to work. The stuff wouldn't get done, would it?
100%. I think that, you know, anything in media, I've definitely come to see, sort of dipping my toe into different avenues and different sort of genres, that it is a village, it's a machine, and it takes a lot of people. And it's not just about who you see in front of the camera or who is directing the camera or who's on the mic or who's directly next to that person. It does take a lot. And it's really interesting to sort of meet those types of people, especially in Out of Frame, and hear about their experiences on some of my most loved movies.
What made you want to do the podcast?
Yeah, you know what it is? Like, I'm somebody who, I'm so nosy. And obviously that, but that makes for, you know, a good presenter and good journalist.
All great presenters are, and journalists. We have to be nosy, otherwise we wouldn't care enough, would we, Yinka?
I know, what's the point?
Exactly.
I'm so nosy. So whilst the premieres and the screenings that I host are amazing and they're really fun, I want to talk to everybody. And I want to find out, especially as somebody who exists in front of the camera, you know, when I'm on a TV show, if I'm hosting a show, I know that there are tens, if not hundreds of people whose jobs are so much more important than mine, because without them, we actually physically couldn't be there. So when it comes to film, I want to meet those people as well. And they often have that, the juiciest tidbits too, to tell you.
Yeah. They've got all the inside track, haven't they? They're the ones
that know
everything. In the trailer for the podcast, we heard about careers advice. This is an incredible resource for people who want to work in film, isn't it? Tell me a bit about that.
I think that's one of the fundamentals of Out of Frame, and part of the reason that we are doing it is that especially through some of the interviews that I've conducted, you find that the film industry, the TV industry, is still pretty much who you know. Of course, it is getting better. And of course, there are initiatives like Crew HQ, which do an amazing job. But you are more likely to go further or even get your first job if you know somebody. Having interviews, conducting interviews, having guests to give real world insight, and also advice that you can use. You know, some of my guests have shouted out their own email address or given links to resources that you can go on there and you can apply for courses or you can apply for training. Because once you get into a film set, if you are your best sparkly self, you're probably going to get called again. It might not be for the job that you did initially, but, you know, I've spoken for somebody who was a runner, then they were a PA, and then they, you know, were holding this thing, and then they worked in casting, and then they worked in costume. It's sort of getting people through that door so they can meet the right people and then become the people that you know. So I think it's a really good part of the documentary, and we actually break it up into parts. And one of the parts is solely dedicated to how those who are not yet in the film industry, haven't got their taste yet, or just starting out, how they can actually achieve that. And every answer is different because, of course, everybody's journey is different. But there are little takeaways that you can take. And the guests have been so forthcoming and so sort of not careful, but just considered with their advice, that is so appreciated. Because actually, I would love even one person, but of course more than one person, to use Outer Frame as a tool. And then maybe I interview them in a couple of years and then they can tell me that, oh, actually, I listened to your podcast and that's how I got here. That would be a great full circle moment.
Wouldn't it? That would be so good. But again, I'm struck by the similarities between the film industry and the audio industry. How, yes, it is often sometimes someone you know, or maybe someone you're related to, or that lucky break or that foot in the door that opens that door and gets you in. They're not easy industries to get into, and they're massively oversubscribed with people who want to.
Yeah, and that's why it's really important to speak about below the line roles, because not everybody can be the star of a show or be a director, but you might be really, really good at stunts, being a stunt coordinator. You might find that you have a weird knack of casting and you've got an eye for it, or you might have an ear for something or an eye for lighting. That's the beauty of it. Whilst, you know, I think that most people's first introduction into film is the stars and the director. You could be really good at scripts, or if you've got an organized mind, you know, you could be a HOD, which is like a head of department, head of production, head of something that collates all this information together and makes things happen. There's only room on a film set for one director, but there are hundreds of other jobs that are just as satisfying. It's just being able to see that. You know, some of these job roles, maybe I've heard of it, like I'd heard of a gaffer, but I didn't really know what they did.
I know, you see them on the credits, don't you? And there's hundreds and hundreds of names, and the credits are rolling, and I'm like, what do all these people do?
Exactly. That's the thing, it's giving that insight, because, you know, not everyone can be the director, not everyone can be the A-list Hollywood celebrity. But there are so many other jobs that can fulfill you.
That's interesting you say that, because that range of jobs. Tell me about the range of guests that you've had, because they're all sort of highlighting different jobs. I've just listened to the episode with the intimacy coordinator. That's a relatively new job in film, but it shows how the industry evolves. It's not a job I would have ever thought of, but I found that episode particularly fascinating.
Yeah, it was really fascinating, because a lot of the time I don't consider a job, and then someone comes into the studio and I'm like, of course you have to be there. Of course you do. It's a moot point. You definitely have to
but
be
they
there.
They made hundreds of films without them, didn't they, before 2017. Blew my mind, that.
And Eta's definitely, she's definitely forging the way forward for more scenes, not necessarily just the most intimate ones, to have coaches, to have counsellors there. The range of people that I speak to is literally far and wide, and we always put a call out at the end of each episode that if there is a job that a listener is particularly interested in, let us know. drop us a message and we will try and find somebody who does that job, because we have the connections. We're inside Warner Brothers Studios, you know, to get that person on the podcast so that I can ask them the questions that everybody wants to hear. Hopefully people can use the podcast as a real tool. But, you know, it's everyone from stunt coordinators to producers to casting directors to intimacy coaches like Ita. I spoke to a mental health counselor as well who works on film. And it's really, really interesting. It's not necessary that you have this burning passion to be on a film set to be involved, but, you know, your path can lead there and you can do really well in that industry.
October 2017, the Weinstein allegations and the subsequent Me Too and Time's Up events meant that the industry then was acknowledging we've turned a blind eye, you know, we have to work with respect, creating the codes of conduct. And within that environment, then I was able to say, and here are the intimacy on set guidelines that I'd already written. And here's a way within that intention to work with best practice is the way to work with intimate content in a professional way.
It feels like 2017 was yesterday,
yeah.
But films have been being made for decades and decades and decades. What is the demand for an intimacy coordinator like?
It's absolutely incredible. When I started speaking about the work in 2017, I was saying within 5 years, I hope that this will be understood and start to have traction. It's absolutely happened. The industry knows. And yes, if you look at like most productions, they will now have an intimacy coordinator. The role is inherent now, I would say, in the industry.
What's it like recording these actually at Warner Brothers?
It doesn't get less bizarre, and I go there a couple of times a week. Sort of like you pull up and you've got the Harry Potter studio tour just before you turn into the building. Yeah. And I always think maybe we can take a quick left and just go to Hogwarts for a little while before I go to work.
Yeah.
And then when you're walking through the compound, because it's massive, when you're walking through the compound, each of the films that are in production or TV shows that are in production have code names. You know, you may know that they're filming, for instance, the Harry Potter series that we know that they're filming.
Yeah.
But it's not called that. It's called like Hand and something, or, you know, do you know what I mean? Like something's called Blue Lagoon, something. So everything has a code name. So you're walking past trailers, you're walking past, it's like a village, there's a post office. So you're walking past all the things, there's buggies everywhere. And then you sort of turn into Crew HQ, which is like a really lovely space. And that's dedicated to bringing people into below the line talent from backgrounds who, you know, aren't necessarily sort of serviced or feeding into that area.
Have all the guests been really happy and open to share the tricks of the trade and the secrets of the industry?
Yeah, definitely. Surprisingly, sometimes, because, you know, when people ask me for advice, I'm always like, but you know, the position is filled, right? I'm not retiring just yet. Go and work somewhere else. This position has been filled. No, but seriously, like they have been really forthcoming. And a lot of them have years and years, like decades of experience. So even though their journey into the industry will be different to somebody who's starting in 2025 and beyond, there's a thread there. There's a tenacity and a determination that everyone sort of has in common that has led them to the positions that they're in now. Luckily, I'm in the position where I can speak to people who are really at, you know, the top end of what they're doing. Like, you know, we had Jenny Bevan, who is an Oscar-winning costume designer. It really is the big fry that we're dealing with, and they are so forthcoming and they are so candid about, you know, even the more challenging sides of their industry and their pathway. And it's super appreciated on my side because it means we can give a realistic description and expectation to those who are listening who want to try their hand at whatever that looks like.
Have you been surprised by anything you've learned about the film industry so far recording this podcast?
Well, I was surprised at all of the intimacy cushions that Ita brought out. I was like, whoa, there's a lot of merchandise that you have here.
I loved that bit in the podcast.
There was more in her bag. She brought a suitcase.
I love how you ask people to sort of capture their lives with three films and then choose who would play them in a biopic of themselves. So I'm going to throw those questions back at you.
Well, you know what? I have to be good at this now because I actually judge everyone when they don't give good answers. okay, three films that would sum up my life. I would say Devil Wears Prada for the gowns. And also, it's my favourite film in the world. Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone.
First one, classic.
Yeah, it's the first one. Really, I should pick the sixth one because it's my favourite movie. But the first one, because I love Harry Potter. I love everything about the world. I love Fantastic Beasts. I'm really looking forward to seeing the TV show. Like, I think Harry Potter, definitely. And then thirdly, I would say Fight Club. And not because I'm unwell, but just because I think it is one of the best films in the history of the world. And I love the fact that when it premiered, it got booed and people left the cinema. And there's a story that Edward Norton told about he was standing there and Brad Pitt was next to him and people left the cinema during the film festival where they premiered it. And Brad Pitt turned and whispered, "This is the best film I'm ever going to be in," to Edward Norton. And it's just one of those moments where it proves to you that if you put in the work and if you believe in what you're doing, it might go down like a lead balloon on the first try, but it will stand the test of time. And then who would play me in a movie of my life? I would say Eddie Redmayne, 100%, because he's a bit awkward. He'll channel that side of me really well.
Tell me a little bit about your own broadcast journey, Yinka. How did you get started?
Well, I started on a community station called Rinse FM. I applied to work there after hearing, I think it was Superdrug FM when I was shopping for shampoo one time.
Yeah.
And then I heard the lady say, "That was Ollie Mers and it's 2 for 1 on Tresemme." And I was like, I can do that. And I had just graduated from uni. I didn't want to pursue the subject. And I was kind of like a bit lost. I knew a friend who knew a friend who knew a friend who worked at Rinse FM, who was running Rinse FM actually, and just applied. And I harassed them for ages until they gave me a job. Like, I literally would go and sit on the floor until they gave me a chance to work on the radio. And then sort of from then, I worked my way up to getting onto Capital Extra. And then from Capital Extra, that's where I met my manager and that's where my TV career started. I would say 3 to 4 years of, you know, working. I think I worked 2 jobs and did the show at Rinse FM before I saw sort of, you know, the light, so to speak. And it was really difficult because I didn't know anybody who did what I wanted to do. And also I wasn't convinced it was a real job. It was difficult, but I knew it was something that I wanted to do because broadcasting, presenting, and now obviously journalist by trade, it's the one job I haven't been fired from. So, you know, it must be what's meant to be.
You must be doing something right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's been
yeah.
like 12 years now. I mean, you know, it's a good run.
What about someone who's starting in their career journey in audio? What's the one piece of career advice you would give them?
I would give somebody the advice that I wish I got myself. It would be, you know, if you want to be funny, like, tell jokes. If you want to be an interviewer, go on the road and annoy people and interview them and upload your stuff. I think that in order to show, if it's a radio station, if it's, you know, a potential production company, if it's a TV commissioner, whoever it is, they're not just going to randomly DM you because you seem like nice vibes. You have to show that you can do what it is you say you can do, and you're allowed to be bad at it.
Yeah.
So when I first started, I remember when I wanted to get a job on more mainstream radio, I made a demo and no one told me to do it. I just went on to different agencies and saw that everyone they represented had about a minute or a minute and a half of them speaking on the radio. So I just practiced really hard and made that demo. And then that's what I sent out to the different radio stations, sort of like on my own back. I sent it out to, you know, like Info at Capital Extra, hoping for not to get a bounce back. But I think it's having that, which has sort of like done me well for the rest of my career. So you don't have to do that. You can do it, but you don't have to do that now. You can literally talk into your headphones on whatever social media app it is. You know, you can have your own podcast on SoundCloud and you can just do it. And if you're doing it, then people will see it. And it doesn't matter if it's not thousands or even hundreds of people. You're doing it for yourself because you have the passion, but also you never know, the right person might be listening.
A big thank you to Yinka Bocchini for being my guest this week. You can find Out of Frame wherever you get your podcasts. We'd love you to like and subscribe to the Radio Academy podcast, please. That way you'll never miss an episode and we'd really appreciate it. And if you fancy leaving us a review, we'd love it even more. Thanks. Next week, the podcast comes out as we're heading to London for the Arias. It's also Rajar Day. So my guests are Adam Bowie, who regularly blogs about the subject, and Richard Johnson, Managing Director of the radio marketing and research agency, Hallett Arendt, who are going to help me try and untangle the mysteries of Rajar figures. I'll see you next week.